Well, let's turn back to where we left off last week. Luke 22 and John 13 is where we were. It's where we are this morning as we continue our study in the life of Christ. We've been studying through the life of Christ chronologically, and we've made it to the last days of Jesus' ministry. In fact, we've made it literally to the last day before the cross. We've even made it to evening of the last day as Jesus celebrates a Passover meal with his apostles the night before the crucifixion. We looked at this last week and we saw that that meal began, as Passover Seders do, with a cup of blessing. The Passover Seder or supper revolves around four cups of wine, the first of which, verse 17, is the cup of blessing. And after the cup of blessing, it's my surmise that the disciples looked at each other and wondered to each other, who's going to do the girl stuff? Who's going to perform the ritual of hand washing? Who's going to go around the table with the pitcher and the basin and the hand towel and dribble some water over our fingers so that we can ceremonially wash them together as a symbolic cleansing process before the second cup of the Passover Seder? This is where I believe, verse 24, there was a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. Luke begins that verse by saying, now there were also. That's Luke's way of signifying that this is something that he's pulled out of chronology. Luke does this a lot. Luke organizes things as much topically as he does chronologically. Now there was also is his way of telling us this is something that happened along the way, not necessarily in the order in which it appears in his gospel. Now, different people have different theories about exactly when this happened. Clearly, it happened on the night of the Passover Supper, the Last Supper. I think it happened as they were looking around saying, who's going to perform this function that's normally reserved for a wife or a daughter? Who's going to serve everyone else? And at least in my imagination, they're looking at each other saying, not me. Well, not me. It's not going to be me. I'm greater than you are. What do you mean you're greater than I am? Well, I was with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. Well, yeah, well, look where I'm seated in the seat of honor. Hey, look where I'm lying. I've got my head on his chest. I'm using Jesus' chest as a pillow. I'm the greatest. But it almost doesn't matter when it happened. It's a familiar argument, right? This is a recurring kind of a bickering among them. Who's going to be greatest in the kingdom? Happened in Luke 9, happened in Matthew 20. I'm sure it happened many other times as well. Wherever it happened, whenever it happened on this particular evening, it shows us that the issue is never fully resolved in any of their hearts. Personally, I think it's right here, though, after the last cup, that they begin to bicker and that Jesus comes at them first with words. First saying to them, verse 25, you know, you're acting like a bunch of Romans. The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. You're like the occupying Roman army. You're all about titles and recognition. But then he goes on to point out, titles are misleading, aren't they? Roman emperors, the Caesars, were called benefactors. The idea being that they always ruled, they always did whatever was best for all of the people. The reality was they were almost always monsters, using their power and position to serve themselves, not others. But not so among you, Jesus continues, verse 26. It shouldn't be that way among you. Don't let it be that way among you. You're supposed to be different than the Romans, different than the Gentiles, different than the world. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. He's going even further now. He's saying, don't just be different than the world, be completely different. Be the absolute opposite of the world, the antithesis of the world. Let the elders set aside the privileges and prerogatives that come with their birth order and take the place of the younger. Let the rulers labor more, not less, than those that they rule over. For who is greater? Jesus goes on to ask provocatively, he who sits at the table or he who serves? And that's an easy one, right? Who's greater, the one who sits at the fancy restaurant or the one who waits on him, the one working at the restaurant for $2.65 an hour plus tips? That's easy. It's the one who's sitting at the table, right? But then what do you do with the fact, Jesus asks them, that I'm among you, still verse 27, as the one who serves? You need to realign your thinking, Jesus is saying. He's tried to tell them this many times. He's tried on many occasions, most recently just a few days earlier in Matthew chapter 20. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. But he knows they're still not grasping the concept. So this time he doesn't just tell them, he also shows them. And this is where we flip over to John 13. Keep a finger in Luke, we're coming back. But in John 13, we saw last week, Jesus not only tell the apostles once again that greatness in the eyes of God has nothing at all whatsoever to do with greatness in the eyes of man. This time he shows them. He works it out for them. He demonstrates to them the truth of his words. How? By taking a role normally reserved by a wife or daughter in the Passover ceremony, the hand washing. He goes beyond that, actually. Doesn't just wash hands ceremonially, ritualistically, but he actually washes their feet, literally. Something a slave in Jewish culture wouldn't even be asked to do. And when he was done, we're continuing where we left off now. When he was done, verse 12, when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, "Do you know what I've done to you? Do you have any idea what just took place?" Probably not. It's the apostles. They looked at each other. Well, he embarrassed us, confused us, silenced us. But what's Jesus asking? Well, he's not asking about the theological meaning of foot washing that we talked about last week, the part where we only need to be bathed once in his blood for forgiveness, but continually cleansed through repentance for fellowship with God. We know that's not what he's asking because he's already explained that. Back in verse 10, he already explained to us that he who is bathed need only wash his feet, but is completely clean. So when he asks in verse 12 about what he's done, he's asking about something he hasn't explained yet, something not so much theological as practical. What else am I showing you, he's asking? What else was going on just now when I was washing your feet? What was taking place beyond a lesson in justification and sanctification? And since they have no idea, he tells them, verse 13. He says, let's go back to the argument you were having a few minutes ago, that whole nonsense about who's the greatest. Let me ask you, who's the greatest here? Jesus asking the apostles. He says, me, right? Verse 13, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right. You say, well, for so I am. I'm the highest ranking officer. I'm the top sergeant. I'm the most tenured professor, the department chair. I have every right to command you, he says to them. But I haven't. What have I done instead? What had Jesus done? Not commanded them, but served them. So if I've served you, he continues in verse 14, don't you think you should serve each other? Maybe. Don't you think you can? Don't you think you should? If I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. Back in Luke chapter 6, Jesus asked those that he was speaking to, how is it you call me Lord one minute and then don't do what I ask the next minute? How do you call me Lord and not do what I say? Here he's going even deeper. He's asking his guys, if you're going to call me Lord and say that I'm your teacher, how about if you do what I do? How about if you do what I show you? And do you know what I've shown you just now? Do you know what I did to you just then? He asks in verse 12. They don't know, so he answers his own question. Verse 15, I've given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Serve one another. Wash feet. And you and I are used to hearing things like that. We grew up in church. As long as we've been coming to church, we've been hearing, serve God, serve others, right? But put yourself in the disciples' place. Because for them, this was almost as radical a concept as the day that Jesus told them they needed to love their enemies. Take the lower place, serve one another. Think about the world that they live in. The apostles would have grown up in a world that was influenced by Greek culture, Roman culture, and of course, Jewish culture. The Greeks despised manual labor. They thought it was beneath them. The Romans thought that humility was weakness. And the Pharisees, the leaders of Jewish culture in that, they lived to be served. You grow up with those influences, with those role models, with those philosophies speaking into your life, your mind is going to be blown when somebody says to you, the highest calling of your life is to wash someone's feet. But that's exactly what I want you to do, Jesus says in verse 16. Because why not? Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who sent greater than he who sent him. If it's okay for me, sent by God the Father, Jesus is asking, why shouldn't it be okay for you, sent by me? If it's not beneath my dignity, how can it be beneath yours? So do this, he concludes in verse 17. If you know these things, and obviously they must because Jesus just told them, blessed are you if you do them. I've shown you, Jesus says, so that you'll understand. Now show me that you do understand. It's one of many times Jesus reminds us it's not so much about believing something as behaving something, living out that belief. Many will say, Lord, Lord, and Jesus will say, depart from me, I never knew you. Why? Because what was up here never got down here or out here. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. There's blessings waiting for those who wash feet, in other words. Now, not surprisingly, there are those who try to restrict and confine and systematize what Jesus means here when he tells us to wash one another's feet. The faith I grew up in built a whole ritual around it, around foot washing. And it's possible yours did too, because it's not just the Roman Catholics, but the Anglicans, some of the Episcopalians, many of the Lutherans, even some Baptists and Methodists consider foot washing an ordinance, just south of being a sacrament in some denominations. And if you go to one of those churches on Maundy Thursday, the Thursday before Good Friday, you're likely to see a foot washing ceremony as part of the service, sometimes involving the whole congregation, sometimes with the priest and somebody representing the dregs of society, a felon or a pauper, all commemorating Jesus washing the disciples' feet before the crucifixion. Now, I've been to some foot washing ceremonies that are very sweet, very touching, very moving, very powerful. One of the most powerful, I was actually at a marriage conference, ironically, not with my wife. I was there as staff. But the speaker, as I watched, he had this all set up, and he after one of the messages, had all of the wives wash their husband's feet. And after the next message, he turned around and had all of the husbands wash their wives' feet, illustrating what Paul tells us in Ephesians 5, that as husbands and wives that were to be subject to one another, that were to serve one another. There's a place for that. Symbols are powerful, which is why Jesus uses symbols a lot. And I've seen this one, this ceremonial foot washing, I've seen it used well. I've also seen it abused horribly. There's something about an archbishop who rarely ventures beyond the rarefied air of the cathedral and the hoi polloi that he normally associates with, dressed up in robes with the mitre and holding the scepter, going through the motions of foot washing with somebody that he's never met and is never going to see again. I think that's pretty far afield from what Jesus intends here. What does he intend? Well, first of all, who is he talking to? He's speaking to his followers. He's speaking to the apostles, but by extension, he's talking to you and me, and he's saying, hey, guys, yeah, you guys, you wash each other's feet. Not once a year on a specified day, not just as a special event at a retreat or a conference. In fact, not as any kind of ritual, but as lifestyle. Jesus gave us rituals, not many, but not none. He gave us communion. We're going to talk about that next week. He said, do this and keep doing this because there are reasons why. He gave us baptism as a ritual. He said, this is a useful illustration. It's an opportunity to testify of the new life that I've given you. Keep doing this and use it as an opportunity to be witnesses. But Jesus never said, hey, once a year, get together and scrub bunions. What he says here in John 13 is keep loving, keep serving, keep lifting one another up. Make it part of who you are. How do we do that? Jesus says, if you know these things, verse 17, blessed are you if you do them. What things? If you do these things, what are the things that we'll be blessed if we do? I think Jesus just showed us five of them in the verses that we've looked at. Five different practices, choices, habits maybe. Five things that Jesus is modeling for us here as he washes his friend's feet. And just in noticing that he's washing his friend's feet, he gives us the first. If you're taking notes, you could write down friendship, or better still, fellowship. Five things foot washing entails. The first, I think, is fellowship. Close fellowship. How close? Well, to wash the apostles' feet, Jesus had to get pretty stinking close. And I mean stinking. Uncomfortably close. But uncomfortable or not, I think that's the first thing Jesus is challenging us to do and asking us to wash one another's feet. He's challenging us to get into real fellowship with one another. Up close and personal. Uncomfortable. A lot of us like to go to church the way that we go to the Warren Theater. Come in, say hi to anyone that we happen to know, nod politely at people that we pass close to that we don't know. Get a snack, drink a beverage, watch the show, leave as soon as it's over. And some of you are saying, yeah, that's about right. It would be even better if we could go to church the way that we go to the new AMC theater, because they've got reclining seats. Except foot washing requires something different, doesn't it? It requires close personal contact, close enough to let people see our dirt, close enough to let people help us with our dirt. Close enough to help them with their dirt. Why would I want to do that? I don't want people to wash my feet. I don't want to wash anybody else. I'll wash my feet. You wash your feet. If you need help, I'll send you a bucket and a bar of soap and a scrub brush. Just stay over there with those toenails. The problem is that doesn't work so well. The problem is I don't always know that I'm dirty. Sometimes it takes someone else to say, hey, Patrick, you're kind of ripe. The problem is I don't always know how to get clean. Sometimes I need a friend to remind me. The problem is once I'm clean, I don't always stay out of the mud. Having somebody close in my life can help me make better choices. The problem is sometimes I get so stinking dirty, I give up on ever being clean again. And then that's when being in close fellowship can maybe help the most. Like it or not, staying clean in this world happens in community. That's the way Jesus designed it. And here he's telling us, not for the first time, to make sure that we have one. To seek, to find, to live in a community. First thing that Jesus tells us about foot washing, it's a team sport. And it's worth asking yourself at this point, do you have a team? Small group, home group, discipleship group, maybe not a group, but an accountability partner. Doesn't have to be formal, doesn't have to have a name and a structure, but are there people in your life close enough to see your dirt? Willing to help you with your dirt? Willing to let you help with theirs. Do you have that kind of fellowship in your life? Well, I mean, I've got friends. Great, but that's not what I'm asking. Do you have that kind of fellowship? Fellowship where you're actually washing each other's feet? Are your relationships growing? Are you scrubbing harder? Are you getting cleaner? Are you digging deeper than you were last spring? Last year? If not, you might need to lean in. Might need to stand closer to the washcloth, like my dad used to tell me. Or maybe get a different group, a different community, a different partner, different fellowship that's willing to really be about the dirt. If you do have that community, on the other hand, if you found a fellowship of believers that works for you, What are you doing to expand the circle? Are you letting people into your community? Are you helping them find community? Are you talking and sharing with people the real value you found in having that community? And if you don't have those people in your life, what are you doing about it? Are you waiting to be asked? Be careful. There's a fine line between waiting to be asked and pushing people away. Either way, if you see people outside your community or if you are outside community right now, I can't help but notice what Jesus did. He went first. He took the initiative. He bent down. He humbled himself. He took a risk. He was the first to say, "Let me get close." And in doing so, he made himself vulnerable, because being close enough to help is being close enough to get hurt. But he went first. Foot washing, by its very nature, involves being uncomfortable. It's one of those things that we're going to have to make our peace with if we're serious about obeying Jesus in these verses. If you want to do these things and be blessed, we have to accept we're going to be uncomfortable in the process. And one of the ways that we're going to get uncomfortable is coming face to face with the reality. Some of the feet that God calls us to wash are going to be pretty gross. Foot washing is about fellowship, first point. Second point, it's also about helping not just those who are clean, but those who are failing, those who have fallen, those who have gotten pretty funky. One problem I have with foot washing ceremonies, and again, they have their place, but the thing about a foot washing ceremony that happens at a scheduled time at a planned location, no one comes with dirty feet. You know you're going to be that close with someone, you wash your feet, you trim your toenails, you dig out the gunk, you sand your calluses, you wear odor-absorbing socks. Your feet have never been that clean as when you're going to present them to be washed. What's wrong with that picture? Real foot washing happens when, hey, I didn't have time to clean my feet. When, hey, I don't know how to clean my feet. When, wow, I'm afraid to clean my feet. I can't even stand the smell of my own feet. Real foot washing happens when someone cares enough, when someone loves me enough to say, "Hey, Patrick, you're funky and gross. Let me help you clean your feet." I watched my wife do that yesterday, not with feet, but with an elbow. You didn't see because he's wearing long sleeves, but Hector fought gravity yesterday and lost. Street one, Hector zero. So Anne was watching him in worship practice, and at the end of rehearsal, she looks at this bloody elbow and said, Did you clean that? Because that's gross. And Hector said, "Well, I splashed some water on it." And she said, "Oh, that's a good way to get it infected." She said, How about I be your mom for a second? How about I be your community?" And she went in and dug in and scrubbed that thing. I didn't even want to watch. But she ignored the fact that it was all bloody and gnarly and did way more than splash water on it. No way it's getting infected now. It's beyond clean. Because someone was willing to get involved with someone else's grossness. That's how we need to be with each other. Washing feet means being willing to get close to some gross stuff, close to the blood, close to the barf, close to the poop, literally and figuratively. My greatest regrets in ministry, in life for that matter, are the times that I wasn't, the times that I got scared away by the funk, by the messy, by the gross. Some of you remember Andy Dean, director of Calvary's Bible College. He's spoken here a couple times. He taught our men's retreat in 2017. When Andy and I were serving in ministry together, we noticed a young man starting to smell spiritually. Just, you know, how someone seems a little off. And I said to Andy one day, "Is he off?" And he said, "Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you. He seems a little off, doesn't he? Yeah, I think he... I can't tell you what it is. There's just something." And he said, "Yeah, I think you're right. Well, we should talk to him. Someone should talk." Yeah. And we parted ways, and I was really glad that Andy was going to talk to him, so I didn't have to get in the middle of what I was sure was some ugly drama. And he walked away really glad that I was going to talk to him so that he didn't get involved in some gross, gnarly drama. Neither one of us talked to him, because deep down, neither one of us wanted to. And the young man ended up falling hard and lost a lot. If you've heard that story before, it's because that's how much it haunts me. Scripture tells us not to run away from those conversations. Jesus says runs towards them. Scrub brush in one hand, bar of soap in the other. Wash one another's feet. He tells us how to have those conversations. He says correct one another in a spirit of what? Gentleness. Sometimes we're tempted when we see someone that's all messed up. Okay, I've got the iodine. I've got the rubbing alcohol. I've got boiling, scalding water. I'm going to wash that person. Because deep down we're hoping that they hate it so much they'll never ask us again. We'll have an excuse to not get messy. That's not what Jesus tells us to do. Jesus tells us to have those conversations with a spirit of gentleness, but he tells us here and elsewhere to have those conversations, doesn't he? Speak the truth in love, Paul says in Ephesians, making it clear neither part is optional. Speaking the truth is not a choice, it's a commandment. Loving as we do it is not a choice, it's a mandate. If we want to obey Jesus, if we want to wash feet. Here's another part that's not optional, third thing that's part of foot washing, forgiveness. And I could have started here, actually, because remember, that was the theological meaning of foot washing we talked about last week. Making sure we let repentance cleanse our relationship with God and restore fellowship. It's not any less true in our relationship with one another. Living in fellowship with fallen, funky people, we're going to rub each other the wrong way, aren't we? We're going to get our dirty feet in one another's faces. Maybe even cut each other up with some jagged toenails. Part of foot washing is deciding to get past that. Get past the hurt, the injury. Letting forgiveness wash it all away. All of the tension, all of the drama, all of the tightness that can build up among us so we can get back to being us. Living in community, building each other up. And that's something that we all kind of know. Christianity 101, right? The Lord's Prayer, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. But sometimes it takes something to really drive those familiar truths home to us. I was serving in ministry again back in New Jersey, serving with someone I'd gotten really close to, still am. He's like a brother to me, which means sometimes we fight like brothers. Close enough to help means close enough to get hurt. We'd hurt each other pretty bad. I'd hurt him, he hurt me, and had gotten to the point we hadn't spoken in weeks other than what our ministries required of us. Started to get conspicuous to people, and a few people washed our feet and said, hey, you guys need to work this out. So we decided to sit down and hash it out. We met at a diner, and I had a list 3 pages long, single-spaced typed of grievances. All stubborn, stupid, inconceivable, unbelievable things this guy had done to me, things he needed to beg my forgiveness for, things he needed to admit were reprehensible and promise to never do again, or there was no going back. Well, we'd literally just gotten started. He probably had his own list. We'd gotten as far as me telling him that he was a jerk, him telling me that I was an idiot, and my phone rings. And it's someone else from the church saying, hey, do you know where Brian is? I said, yeah, I'm sitting across from him right now. I put the call on speakerphone. There was a counseling situation we both had a piece of, different members of this family, and the whole thing had gone horribly south. So we listened and we said, okay, where are they? And said, all right, we're on our way. And Brian looks at me, and he actually grabbed my elbow, and if I think hard, if I think about it, I can feel his hand on my elbow. And he looked at me with a look that I'd never seen before, and he said, I forgive you. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you're an idiot, and I forgive you. Okay, what's happening now? He said, dude, we need to go minister to this family, both of us. We need to do it together, and we need to do it under the power of the Holy Spirit, or we're going to make a mess out of it. But none of that is going to happen if we don't get rid of all of this bitterness, and I mean now. So he says, I'm serious. You've been an idiot, and I forgive you. And I've been a jerk. You should forgive me, and let's go do ministry. And so I did. And we drove over and ministered to the family, and I've never seen God show up quite the way that he did that day. Supernaturally, I knew what to say and I knew what not to say, and I knew when to step in and I knew when to step back, and I knew when to push Brian forward, and I knew when it was time to just wait. And it all happened because we both showed up with clean feet. We still had stuff to sort out with one another, and eventually we got around to that, but I didn't realize quite how much we were quenching God's ministry, his ministry in us, to us, his ministry through us, and until forgiveness took all that bitterness away. And it's not for nothing that Paul tells us in Ephesians 4, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you, along with all malice. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. It's just Paul's way of saying what Jesus just said, wash each other's feet. It's also Paul's way of saying, continue to follow Christ. Fourth point, if you're still taking notes. Follow Christ. I've given you an example of what you should do, Jesus said in verse 15. I've given you an example of what you should do when I send you, he says in verse 16. Jesus, the one who didn't come to be served, but to serve. Paul grasps that idea, that following Jesus means washing feet, means being a servant, means taking the low place. He runs with it. When he's writing to Timothy about appointing deacons, he says, let them first be tested in 1 Timothy 3:10. See if they're true servants. See if they know how to wash feet. He actually says the words when he's telling Timothy, don't start supporting any widows until you test them. And one of the tests that he prescribes, 1 Timothy 3:10, let widows be tested. Have they washed the feet of the saints? He's not talking about a literal ceremony. He's saying, are they serving? Are they loving? Are they following Jesus' example? You know, the phrase, what would Jesus do, became a cliche back in the 90s because people figured out that they could profit off of Jesus by putting WWJD on everything and reduced a really important idea to a bumper sticker. I trip over the cliche at this point, but we can still get to the idea by asking, what would love do? What would a servant do? How can I wash feet here? And you know, when we keep that question in front of us, it opens up a whole range of possibilities, a whole gamut of ways for us to follow Jesus' example, asking, how can I wash feet in this situation? Whose feet am I in a position to wash right now? Can I bless someone, do something for them that they can't do themselves in the yard or running errands? Can I pay for something that they can't afford? Can I do something so that they don't have to, or do something that they would never do for themselves? Can I invite someone out to lunch, over for dinner, to church? Can I invite someone to join a conversation or be part of a group? Can I call someone? Let them know they're not alone, they're not forgotten, they're remembered, they're cared about. Related to that, can I listen to someone? The most precious thing that we have other than the gospel is our time, which means that the most valuable thing that we can give someone other than the gospel is a listening ear. Can I thank someone, encourage someone, let them know that they're noticed and valued, appreciated? Even before they finish whatever it is that they're doing, can I stand up for someone? Can I stand with someone? Can I support someone? People who study change say that the most important person in any change process is the second voice. The person who jumps up and says, I think that they've got an idea. The person who's willing to say to that person standing, you're not alone. And the person who's willing to stand in front of everyone else and say, they're not alone. Can I apologize to someone? It's one thing to forgive. We've talked about that. But can I ask for someone's forgiveness? Can I humble myself and take the first step to restoring a relationship and admit that I was wrong? Maybe they were wrong too, but am I willing to go first? Can I pick up after someone? That's another way of blessing someone, I suppose, but I think this one deserves its own category. The people who stayed until 11 p.m. or later at Light the Night, I mean, everybody served. But special crowns in heaven for those after a long day of work and a long evening of ministry stayed to help clean up. The people who stayed after 5 o'clock after the potluck last week, the people who snagged my empty tea mugs that I leave all around the church, the people who shoveled the driveway, the people who cleaned the bathrooms before any of us got here this morning. Well, that's a special kind of foot washing. Can I pray for someone? The answer is almost always yes. Strike that. The answer is always yes. There's no situation we can ever be in where we can't pray for someone, which means there's no such thing as a situation where there are no feet to wash. You're never going to be anywhere where there's no one or nothing that you can think of to pray for. We could keep going, but just one more. Can I receive from someone? Can I let someone wash my feet? Can I let them obey God and follow Jesus and use their gifts to minister to me? A lot of us have a hard time with that. But that's a way of serving, by letting someone else serve us. I'm among you as one who serves, Jesus said back in Luke 22. Go ahead and flip back there as we wrap up. Jesus is going to give us one final point. Luke 22, verse 27, I'm among you as one who serves, but you are those who have continued with me in my trials. And because you have, verse 29, I bestow upon you a kingdom, just as my Father bestowed one upon me, that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. What did Jesus just say? He's talked to us about fellowshipping, even with those who are failing, forgiving, following Jesus' example. He just gave us our last F, and that's forgetting. Forgetting. Yeah, rewind for a second. I bestow upon you a kingdom. Jesus is saying, when I return to set up my kingdom, my physical kingdom here on earth, you guys, the apostles, you're going to rule and reign with me. Okay, step back and ask, why? Well, because they persevered. Jesus said that they endured with him. Are we talking about the same guys? Peter's about to deny him. In less than 24 hours, all of them are going to abandon him. And even after Jesus is raised from the dead, Thomas is going to continue to question him. Persevered? Really? It makes sense when we remember, yeah, they made those mistakes. Yeah, they all fell short. But what they all have in common, all except Judas, is that they'd all been cleansed. Jesus said so earlier that evening. They'd all been washed with the blood of Jesus Christ before he even shed the blood. And on this side of the cross, Jesus doesn't remember our sin. Love keeps no record of wrongs, right? Hebrews 11 in the Hall of Faith, there are some scoundrels in that list. None of their sin, none of their transgressions are mentioned, only their faith. And see, remembering that, remembering that Jesus forgets our mistakes, should help us forget ourselves. Because when you get right down to that, that's what foot washing is, right? Isn't foot washing just another way of saying forgetting ourselves and living for God and others? Forgetting about praise and profit in this life and following Jesus, doing what he did, laying down our lives, focusing on the kingdom that God the Father has promised us in the next life? Forgetting about whether or not anyone can pay us back or whether they're willing to wash our feet as much as we're willing to wash theirs? Forgetting about whether they can pay us back, forgetting about whether they have paid us back for the last time we washed their feet, or whether they can pay us back or ever will pay us back. Forget about being repaid, Jesus is saying. And forget about being appreciated. It probably won't happen. The mark of a servant is how we respond when what? When we're treated like a servant, Gail reminds us every time he's here. You know, if we really forget ourselves, die to ourselves, we need to get ready to be misunderstood, criticized, ignored. We will be, if we forget ourselves, misunderstood, criticized, overlooked. Because again, being close enough to help is being close enough to hurt. All of that stuff is going to happen. It comes with the territory. But that's okay. Better than okay. It's what washing feet is all about. It's not about being noticed or appreciated or repaid. We won't be most of the time. It's not about being misunderstood or hurt or criticized. We will be a lot of the time. And we can forget about getting it right because we won't many, many times. There's no way we can. Sometimes we'll go in and try to help and we'll end up hurting. When it does, we need to forget. Strike that. We need to not forget. We need to remember we've been forgiven. We've been forgiven. Jesus has already washed far more than our feet. Sometimes we'll try to wash feet and it seems like we're not helping or hurting. It feels like we're just wasting time, wasting energy, wasting love. Sometimes it seems like the person we're trying to help isn't deserving of our time or our energy or our love. But that brings us to the most important thing we can't forget. We must not forget. None of us deserve God's love. In the upper room, that night that he was betrayed, the night he was arrested, Jesus washed Peter's feet, knowing he would deny him. Jesus washed Thomas's feet, knowing that he would doubt him. Jesus washed Judas's feet, knowing he had already betrayed him. Knowing Judas would betray him, knowing Judas wasn't saved and never would be, Jesus still washed his feet. Boy, I'm glad he did. Because that gives me permission to not think so hard. That gives me permission to stop trying to figure out whether or not someone deserves God's love or has been predestined for God's love. Forget about all of that, Jesus says. Just love with God's love. Every time I've tried to figure it out, I've almost always gotten it wrong. People that I thought were hopeless are pastoring churches now. And people that I imagined God had great plans for, some of them aren't even walking with the Lord right now. Forget about all of that, Jesus says. Just love. Don't just know of God's love. Don't just receive and store up God's love. Don't even stop at speaking of God's love. Do what Jesus did and show people God's love. Wash one another's feet. And look forward to the day, not in this life, but in the next life, when he makes good on his promise. Look forward to the day when we'll be blessed because we have. Lord, open our eyes. Help us see what you see. Help us see who you see. The hurting, the broken, the lonely, the lost, the confused, the complacent. Lord, help us to see with your eyes. Help us to love with your heart. Lord, lead us in the way that we should go. And continue doing what you've done here this morning. Continue teaching us to wash feet.